Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
Good morning. It is Tuesday, the 25th of June. You're listening to Viewpoint Talk Radio's current affairs programme with a panel of invited guests discussing the issues of the day with you for the next 2 hours. If you wish to get involved with today's show, then these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Yes, indeed, those are the ways to get involved with us today. Let's have a look at the front pages this morning, looking at the always live, always lively. This is going to be an interesting one today, methinks. Looking at the papers today, the Sun leads on a clash between Rishi Sunak and Keir Starmer over immigration policy during a leaders' debate organised by the paper. Rishi via Keir at Sun headquarters, boats war. PM, migrant queues at Calais. If Labour get in, Starmer, we will crush gangs behind trafficking. The Daily Telegraph, Scotland Yard has been accused of leaking the identities of Conservatives implicated in the general election betting scandal. Fluttergate, as it's known. According to the Daily Telegraph, the Mirror, Daily Mirror leads with the court being told that a security guard spent almost 2 years planning to kidnap, rape and murder Holly Willoughby, the TV presenter. The Express tops with Princess Anne being rushed to hospital and treated for concussion after being injured by a horse. The Times says that Labour will introduce a full ban on conversion therapy if it wins the election, according to the Times. Meanwhile, The Guardian, low wages and price increases have pushed 900,000 children into poverty. That's The Guardian writing that one. The Daily Mail leads on the trial of an obsessed security guard who was accused of plotting to kidnap, rape and kill TV presenter Holly Willoughby. The I, both the Conservatives and Labour have refused to rule out at least 10 different tax rises after the general election. That's according to the I. Metro leads on the security guard on trial. Holly Willoughby attempted kidnap. And the Financial Times goes with the Conservatives and Labour setting out plans to improve public services that are essentially underfunded. That's according to the Insurance and the Institute for Fiscal Studies. And finally, because we like to give it a bit of balance, Today's Star says, the Daily Star leads on Gary Lineker blaming journalists for stirring the pot in the aftermath of criticising England and Captain Harry Kane after the draw against Denmark during Euro 2024. Gaz has a moment off his head, son. Crybaby Lineker blames the Star after he describes England match as you-know-what. But wise and handsome Alan Shearer tells him stick to selling crisps, and those for better or worse are your headlines on this Tuesday, the 25th of June.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And talking all things Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, I've torn our panellists away from the excitement of the Euros. Delighted to welcome Richard Cowell back. And Richard, good morning to you.
Good morning. Nice to be back. Thank you.
Good to have you with us. And before he goes off on his holiday, Alf Brewer has graced us with his presence. Alf, how are you?
Yes, I'm fine. Off to the Algarve on Saturday.
Yep.
For 2 weeks' family holiday, which we all look forward to. So I'll be in Portugal when the election takes place.
Yes, indeed. This is the last but one before the general election.
Absolutely.
How will we survive without you?
And Gary Lineker don't do the crisps anymore, does he?
He does, yeah. He still does the crisps.
I've already passed it over to somebody else who earned a load of money.
No. No, no, he's still doing the... Right, anyway, good morning.
I never watch it.
You never watch it. 952-78-4000. In fact, I'll let Lizzie do the numbers for me this morning.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Those are the numbers to get in touch with us if you want to say hello this morning. Right then, panel. Quite a lot obviously been happening since we last spoke. 8 years since the Brexit vote. We've got Fluttergate. We've got last night's Julian Assange.
Stop me.
Okay, stop
only,
you.
Only 72 years since I was born.
Is it your birthday today?
Yep.
Happy birthday. You didn't say that. Happy birthday, Alf. Well, you know, I would have bought you a cake or something.
72 years young. No, I don't want a cake because it makes me even fatter.
Right, okay, fair enough.
You're fat enough with a beer.
Happy birthday. Right. Farage, of course, with his comments about Putin, and the Argentinian president is causing a bit of a stir in Spain as well. So that's and anything else that you want to get in touch with, and let me know this morning. Panel, where would you like to start? Come on, Alf. As it's your birthday, Alf. That could have been an evil plot. Just to get in there first.
Well, I'm still trying to count because the paper said that they're hiding, and it wasn't just Labour. The Institute for Fiscal Studies said all the parties were hiding all these tax hikes. There you go. So think of the next thing you can make up. So the paper said, oh, there's 10 taxes that they're going to put up. And last night I was watching Sky News where they go through the papers, and I think they got up to 22. So it's called Think of a Tax, however vague it is, and that's something else they're gonna increase after the general election, whoever wins. So, you know, watch out, Britain. They're gonna not just empty your pockets, they're gonna empty your savings, take your house away from you, sink the country, and get rid of all the nuclear submarines, if you believe what the papers tell you.
Well, do you find it, I found this quite interesting with the... We maybe, because again, as the saying goes, the only poll that matters is the poll that takes place, you know, in the general election itself. But we're now having people saying that if it is as bad as they think it might be, this, you know, the worst defeat for 100 years, 200 years, pick a number and go for it. And people are thinking this could be a real threat to democracy, because they're saying there might be no Her Majesty's opposition if they've only got 80 seats or something like that.
There's no opposition now, is there? 80-seat Tory majority, Labour as a rump group of people still sulking, SNP wanting something different. Are not really interested in English politics, only interested in Scottish politics, and they're not doing, by the sounds of it, a very good job up there. The Irish feeling completely disenfranchised because of Brexit. Yeah, and we go, oh, hang on a minute, it might be a landslide. But for the first time ever, the pollsters have actually said they might be wrong. And you go, what? The pollsters never say that. They give a forecast, 220-seat majority or something ridiculous, and then say about 139 of those we're not sure about because they're too close to call. So they're that too close to call that what they've done is said, well, because Labour look like they're going to win, we'll just give them all to Labour. This is like those some of those sports that you play where you go, well, if you lose... Everything you've got is given to the opposition. It's just weird. It's just the weirdest, and I've been involved, as you know, Giles, in lots and lots of election campaigns. This is the weirdest, most strangest, unusual, nobody's talking about policies, really. You know, it's all infighting. We're going to do this to you, you're going to do that to us. Farage comes along. Farage actually added a boost because my forecast was always going to be that this general election would be the lowest turnout ever because people in the UK, it's not that they're fed up with politics, they just don't know who to trust. Of any of the parties.
Well, I think the younger generation isn't interested that much in politics nowadays. It's such a turn off because let's take someone like United States.
Right.
For something a little bit different. You have a choice of Donald Trump or Joe Biden. I mean, you know, quite frankly, I wouldn't vote for either, given. And then if you look at the Sunak and the first debate between Sunak and Starmer, just on looking at a bit of charisma, I mean, Sunak doesn't have that much charisma, but at least he comes up with certain quite key ideas, and at least he's seemingly rosy proactive. Whether they actually get done, but at least he's showing something. For example, whether you like it or not, this Rwanda program carries some weight. It's moving things. It's shifting something. It's rocking the boat a bit. Under Starmer, I always feel it's a little bit underwhelming what he says. It looks like it's just going to be a civil servant taking over a political party, and nothing much really is going to happen. A lot of dithering, a lot of U-turns. It's not going to lead us anywhere. And I think the UK needs a certain amount of harsh leadership.
Do you think, panel, that the Labour haven't done a lot with manifestos because they haven't needed to? Because what's been going on with the Conservative Party is it sort of stumbles. I mean, I listened to the newsagents podcast, and they're just every week there's something new, because if it's not the beaches at D-Day, and these may not be policy issues, but they are the sort of thing in the era of the politics of the soundbite and the tweet, or the X, I want to call it, these disasters that's befallen themselves, even if it's the image of standing out in the rain, then followed by the D-Day, now followed by Fluttergate or wherever they're calling it. They just seem to be bouncing, and Farage coming in. It seems to be that Labour don't actually need to do any hard canvassing.
Yeah, which is very, very sad, because at the end of the day, what we need is, in the UK, we need leadership, strong leadership. We need people with ideas. And you might not agree with everything that's going on and all the ideas that are being proposed, but at least, there are ideas. And also, to boot, you have to get the civil service to work with you. Now, I can see a strong clash of someone like Starmer with the civil service. And what we'll get is maybe 4 years or whatever of not much happening, let alone any strong policies. We've seen from Starmer that he doesn't come up with a strong policy, a strong point of view. He can change his mind quite readily. So I'm not saying that you shouldn't vote for someone like Starmer, but personally, my point of view, as it were, I think Sunak does come across with some ideas, strong ideas. History has been bad for Sunak. You know, the 14 years of conservative management of the country hasn't been brilliant at all. But at least he comes up with someone who has fixed ideas. When asked, would you go private on medical? He said, absolutely. You know, he's fairly above board with all these things. So, the choice between the two I don't think is great, but my tendency would be more to go towards Sunak for the good of the country rather than someone like Starmer, where we'll just stagnate a bit.
Alf, you want to come back on any of those points?
Well, only to say...
They said it just to rile Alf, by the way, just to get him going.
It will take somebody and people much bigger than you. Believe you me, I've been around this block so many times and I hear these things. In fact, the guest that you had on the other week, I was quite amazed about. He was talking about, what was his thing? It was John Smith, old Labour's last hooray. Yeah. Yeah. And he was talking about John Smith, and he actually said during the thing that John Smith was a stopgap between Kinnock and Blair. Well, John Smith wasn't a stopgap between Kinnock and Blair. Kinnock was the stopgap between Michael Foot.
That's a Blair, yeah.
And whoever was going to be the next leader. And we had to go through a phase of changing from, the manifesto, which was the longest death thing in history. You put everything in a manifesto, and that's exactly the same as what Corbyn did and why he got minced. You cannot tell the people, and nobody disagrees. This is what we need to understand. If you talk to real socialists, very few of the ideas in either of the manifestos would socialists disagree with. Yeah, you might have a disagreement maybe over NATO or about nuclear weapons, but in the main, everything else is like, you know, renationalisation of railways, more money for the National Health Service, better education system, especially for people who can't afford private. All of the, and it's the same with that. Oh, yeah, you know, if you couldn't get attention in an hospital, would you go private? There shouldn't even be that choice, in my opinion, in the UK. There should be a decent health service.
That's looking at a viewpoint in, like, utopia.
No, that's not utopia at all.
It is.
We had a health service introduced into the UK in 1945 by the then Labour government that lasted for years without private medicine. The private medication came in because the banks decided to offer private medicine for their employees. That's when Bupa started. So the unions had private medical care years and years and years ago. In a place at Finsbury Park in London, they used to have an organisation that offered it. But it was rare stuff. And so it's easy to take these things and say, like, Rwanda's a good idea. A good idea for what? We need to put the investment into killing off the people, not killing literally, but sorting out the people who are taking money to put people's lives in danger going across the channel. We need to invest money in the processing of these people, who many, was it 75% of the people who were coming across originally, not so much now, 75% of the people were getting asylum in the UK. But because we delay it for 2 and 3 and 4 years, I've worked in these asylum places. These people don't come here as, you know, it's not like the Ugandan Asians who escaped before they were booted out by Amin. We're not talking about refugees. These people had stacks of money, and they knew how to go around the world. And people with money know how to travel around the world and to avoid the worst of conflicts. The people who can't escape are the people who don't have the money, who are stuck where they're stuck. And they're the people we should be concentrating on and helping. The biggest number of people, they've just announced, the largest number of people who are coming across the channel in boats are Vietnamese. No, they're not Albanians. Mm. They're not Europeans. They're not North Africans. These people are from Vietnam, still coming over because there's some level of oppression. And because Vietnam is that, because the Brits can go on holiday to Vietnam, all of a sudden it's a safe country. If it's a safe country, why are these people fleeing?
Why is Putin popping in to say hello on his way?
Absolutely. But he's going to northern China, which everybody knows was the communist end of it, and dominated. A lot of these boat people are coming from Hanoi and southern Vietnam, where they were never part of that set. They were these escapees after the Americans did such a rubbish job. No, they didn't do a rubbish job. They just didn't. They didn't plan the Vietnam withdrawal Afghanistan and places. We're good at fighting, but we're not very good at withdrawing.
It's all right. I'm just doing a timeline of how we got from, because you know how we got from tax to the pacification for the Vietnam War in 68, which is obviously, you know, the Tet Offensive. Brilliant.
Richard, interesting thing that's happened quite recently. It's been sort of seething for a few months now, and it's what Alf was talking about, immigration. Macron and Meloni. Macron of France and Meloni of Italy. Macron sort of came up saying that Meloni's politics are disgusting, etc. And Meloni came out the other day, and she's done it now a couple of times, by saying that, well, you know, actually, if you look at the problem of migration, what you see is still the continued exploitation of African countries by colonial powers. Yeah. And she says, well, Mr. Macron, you should look yourself in the mirror, especially in countries like Niger, where they're mining for uranium, and I think about 30% of French power generation comes from the mines of Niger. And these people, you know, in Niger, there's not much electricity for them themselves. Mm. Plus, you know, there's gold miners in Burkina Faso where kids are doing it. So Meloni turned around and said to Mr. Macron that he should, you know, instead of exploiting Africa, basically, you know, colonial powers should leave Africa alone and let them get on with their, you know, running their business in their countries. because it's the influence, it's the continued influence. And the other thing about in France, I believe 14 African countries have their money minted in France. And part of, so they have to pay for it. And part of the deal is that I think a certain percentage of export has to go into France. So it's part of what these all
print,
weird
we will we will print your money, we will mint your money, but we want some back exactly. in return, basically.
So you have to start looking at migration. I mean, you know, I've lived in the Middle East for quite a number of years, and I've seen the effect of the wars that you have in Afghanistan or in Iraq, Syria. You know, they've been nonsensical wars, quite frankly, and have had no result, no end game, unless the end game has been chaos. But these people, you know, who would normally want to reside back in their home in Syria, etc., they have to flee. And as far as I'm concerned, because the United States started a lot of these things, a whole lot of them should go off to the United States. But of course, the United States is so far away that they're immune to any of the migrants.
They've got their own situation at the moment with the, you know, with the migration coming from South and Central America.
But compared to the volume that you see of coming out of Afghanistan, out of Syria, out of Iraq, etc., is nothing. The problem is huge. And also, the guys leaving Guatemala or Nicaragua or whatever, going to trying to get to the United States, their countries are still countries. Iraq is not a country. It's even worse than Saddam Hussein. Syria is a total abortion of a place. And Afghanistan, you got to be kidding me. You know, it's the legacy that these invasions have are pernicious. They're terrible. But no one really sort of says, well, okay, well, we shouldn't be doing this, really. The UK government will follow quite happily whatever the United States says. We will actually endorse it. I mean, someone like Tony Blair, for example, giving this information about weapons of mass destruction to the United States, to empower the United States to go and invade Iraq. I mean, Blair should be put in prison for that, as far as I'm concerned, because what he gave was knowingly gave falsified documentation or unproven and very, very dubious, and known that it was very dubious information to allow for the United States to go and decimate a country.
But at the time, obviously,
that's not true. It was to allow the UK to join with the USA to invade.
It was slightly supporting different. To have Colin Powell stand up.
No, if you get into politics, because it's political decisions that are made. It wasn't Tony Blair off his own back. And I hate it when people go, it's Blair, it's Blair. There was a whole government voted in favour of that. There were cross-party votes in favour of that. There was a feeling that if we didn't sort out Saddam Hussein, then Iran would go into something.
What?
And the problem, with the West.
How can you tie Iran into with Iraq? I don't follow that argument
Iraq,
at all.
Sorry, Iraq, not Iran.
Yeah.
Saddam Hussein. And
so what was wrong with Saddam Hussein? Apart from him being rather nasty guy,
the West
and his two kids being even worse.
But wherever the West goes,
what was wrong with him?
Wherever the West go, there's always this thing about, oh, they shouldn't have done that. And you say Afghanistan. What was the problem in Afghanistan? I don't know. I haven't got that brain power to do it. But I know what happened. The Russians went in first for whatever reason.
Did they? Did they? Are you sure about that, Alf?
No, the British went in years ago. But that's neither here nor there. The first of the big modern day catastrophes in Afghanistan started with Russia going in there. And I didn't say they invaded. I said they went in there.
Kabul in the 1960s.
They went in there at the request of the Afghan government of the time. So did the Americans. The Afghan government say we can't, all this, the Taliban and all that, we can't deal with them on our own. You've got to come and help us to clear out the Taliban, clear out the terrorists, so all that. The same with Lebanon, the same with Syria, the same, wherever you go. So what happens there's a call to the West for Morocco, for Algeria. This isn't, you know, these people didn't just come along and say, oh yeah, let's go and invade Algeria. The West never invaded Algeria. You know, you have a despot leader,
right,
and lots of people in the country, by whatever method, get messages and it always goes to the United States because they're the biggest power in the world, the biggest individual power in the West. So people go there and say, we really need you want to stop the terrorism, you want to stop Lockerbie, then you have to come and help us to sort out the terrorists that we've got in our country. And that starts with changing the leadership. The problem is that the West go in and change the leadership, and it's a leadership change. And they don't leave these countries as if they're going to sort themselves out.
But they leave it. You can argue they leave it in their own image, can't you? That's the thing. You go to a country, absolutely. You try and put in...
Tribal wars carried on as tribal wars after they got rid of whatever the guy who was in charge of Algeria.
Go to a quick break whilst we get to debate this one.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
And we're back, always live, always lively, joined in the studio by Richard Carroll and Alf Brewer, who was, I think, was swinging from your Labour mug with grim determination there, Alf.
you wait, Giles, in about 10 years' time, the U in Labour will disappear.
Right.
It's spelled the American way, L-A-B-O-R.
There you go. There's a thing on that. There's no U in Labour. That'll be like there's no...
there's no team.
Exactly.
Well, if you look at the way that English is spoken and written nowadays, there's no T apparently in the English language.
In it.
Absolutely. Well, you've got the T in the end,
haven't you? No, because it's like
there's
the silent
no
T.
There's no H. There's never been an H in the East London alphabet ever. And so coming to Spain was a real good eye-opener because there's no H's here either.
I was trying to explain to a Spanish friend of mine why there's no Enya. And also, when I was at school in Staffordshire, we had a kid in my class was called... What's your name? Usnu. How do you spell it? H-U. It's like for Turkish parents, but anyway.
I was in the chemist and I had to get some iron tablets. So the guy's going, iron.
Iron.
Iron. So I said, no, it's iron. There's no R in iron.
Yeah, well, that's English as a language, as it's not
absolutely in its own right. Nobody English says iron.
Coven.
Or Iran.
Or, I used to have a friend named Cahoon.
Cahoon. Oh, yeah, well, that's, yeah.
Yes. Cahoon, isn't it?
Try explaining
to somebody outside of Southern Ireland that Neve hasn't got a V in it. Or what's the other one? Siobhan.
Yeah.
And there you spell Siobhan. Nothing. And that's so much with the English language is, word that means 20 different things.
But also it's changing. I mean, all languages develop over time. And we had a conversation the other day with some friends about, don't ask me why, LGBTQ plus IA. All right. And, we're wondering what some of these words
plus
meant.
IA.
Plus IA.
Are they just putting things on the end of it now?
This is half the conversation that we're having. But one of the things was like the difference between queer and gay, if one's allowed to say these things.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go through the actual things because someone's going to lambast me for saying, I don't know what I'm talking about.
52 varieties.
Absolutely. And then twin spirits and all. But it was actually very interesting how the English language develops over time. And it always has done. It always has done. But, the words like queer and gay, you can't use that in a normal conversation as you could, say, 15, 20 years ago.
But you see, in which case you are standing on very thin ice, because queer can be used as a term, because my friend who, the reason I said 52 varieties wasn't me making an arcane reference to baked beans, was that he's got a factory in Germany. He was sent by this German government, the health and safety, a list of all the possibilities that there were, including stone butch, pansexual, polysexual, and queers in there as a term. Mm. So, it can be...
But do people know the actual definition of them?
Queer is when you're ill. Gay is when you're happy. That's where I come from. I'm 72. When I was a kid, if your mum said to you, feeling a bit queer, it meant, are you feeling unwell?
You're off colour. Yeah.
And when they said, it's a gay time now, isn't it? It meant you was having a happy time. So it's not that the language has changed. People have nicked the words and are using them for different meanings. I'm not sure that's a language evolving. They could have invented some new words for all these things, but they never bothered. And the words that they did invent, if you remember, sound so offensive that people wouldn't use them. I'm not that old, but I remember my dad, my kids, not my grandchildren, my kids coming home from school And we were horrified because my youngest one had just started in nursery, I think it was. And she said, my dad says to her, who's this guy, whatever his name was. It was a West Indian name type thing, if not being facetious. And the first thing my dad said, do you call him Chalky?
Ooh. Right then, let's go.
It was nothing to them. Yeah. It meant nothing to them. He wasn't even being hurtful, but nowadays, it's like, what?
The ghost of Jim Davis just reared his head. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, Felix here.
Felix, how are you?
How are you? Okay. I just heard the beginning of your program, and then I had to take a break, and then I just tune in again, and I want to get again, if I can, the opinion of the panel about the attack on Russia and the Russian Federation, Dagestan, over the last couple of days, and also the shells that were fired against Crimea, and one of the shells, it was five shells, and one of them was taken down, but one of them burst over a beach, and there's been some people killed. The issue here is the issue of nuclear war. Putin has been very careful to keep this inside of Ukraine. But Ukraine is being supplied with weapons that can strike deep inside Russia by all the countries in Europe and America. This is a problem. And it takes very little it takes quite a lot, but it could happen that the danger of nuclear war, I would say, is not a big danger. Not a big danger. But the effects of nuclear war, if these rockets start firing, are so extreme that it takes a little danger, a little chance, a little danger to make me terribly nervous.
Thank you.
And I just add to that I sent a note, a voicemail to Stephen Ritson yesterday.
Right.
And I would ask him to publish that. It's only a minute and a quarter. And I would like to say here what is in it as well. But I don't have time. I'm going to ring off soon.
Okay.
But I would like that. I would like Stephen Ritson to publish that in full. It's only a minute and a quarter, if that. And it was right on the button as regards things that are happening right now. Okay, I'll leave it there and let the panel... I want to hear the panel.
Okay, thanks.
Whether it's rubbish or not, what I'm saying. Thanks.
Thank you for your call-in.
Thanks for letting me on.
No problem at all. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Felix. Regular caller. Felix is worried, nervous about nuclear war, panel. Richard, I mean, the recent attacks on a synagogue and a church in Dagestan.
Police stations.
Exactly. Just seems an interesting development in the former Soviet republics. Should we be more nervous? I mean, Putin, as I said before, has been in North Korea saying that there would be consequences because they are spinning their narratives very much as the expansion of NATO. And obviously, we go back to Nigel Farage because last week he got himself in some particular trouble, even with the Daily Mail, for saying that... The Putin had been provoked, prodding the Russian bear with the stick. Richard.
Well, first of all, I mean, in Dagestan, it has a bit of a history of instability, shall we say, in the country. And whenever there are problems with, shall we say, the mother country, these sort of instabilities will rear its head. I don't think we should be too concerned about Putin pressing the button. Quite frankly, I'd be more concerned about Donald Trump pushing the button than Putin. It's always there, but it's a deterrent. Putin, whether you like what he's doing or you agree with, for example, what Farage was saying or not, the part of the problem is that wars occur because politicians have failed. Most wars occur because politics has not worked. And I think the Ukraine-Russia issue is very much because of politics. I listened to a report the other day where a person who's an expert at Chatham House was saying that there was no such agreement with Gorbachev and then Yeltsin back in the late 90s on expansion of NATO. Some people say, yes, there was. So it's very difficult to go back and find exactly what is what. But what is very clear to me, as far as I'm concerned, is that Putin has sent very clear messages as to what can be done, what can't be done. You might not agree with him, but he should be in a position to say such a thing. But for example, you take the United States. If either Mexico or Canada, or, well, Guatemala or Nicaragua or anything like that, Costa Rica, if they started becoming friendly with, let's say, the Russian axis, Americans wouldn't like it and they would complain about it.
We've been down here before, haven't we?
Exactly. Right? And they would say, no, you can't do this. So you have to look at it in that sort of point of view, whether Putin is right, Putin is wrong. What I do think has been a tremendous letdown is the way politics has failed Ukraine and the Ukrainians. There's certain things that, you know, are very sensitive, and you've got to look at it with the eyes of Eastern Europe and Russian eyes, not with Western eyes. It's a bit like, and a bit of a tangent, if I can just do this one second.
Tangent ahead, tangents right. Are what we're good at here.
It's like, if you talk about religion, okay, and you look at the Middle East religion, and Dagestan, for example, you know, has its Islamic issues, and as a lot of these countries around that area does have. What you have to understand is, in these countries, in the Middle East in general, they have a reverence and a respect for religion that the West does not have, is lost it. Okay, so when you talk about, for example, at the moment you have the Hajj pilgrims, and over 1,000 have died, etc.
Yeah, yeah,
it's terrible. But again, when people speak, and people in the West speak very liberally about Islam, without actually understanding what Islam means to the average Joe who lives in maybe in Beirut or in Kabul or in Karachi.
Sure.
And this is a little bit where the irritation comes, because the people living in Kabul or Karachi or whatever feel a little bit disrespected, and they feel that the West is disrespecting their religion because they have this reverence and respect that the West does not have.
Because the religion is an integral part of their society in the way.
And it's still very much part of, even though they don't go and pray five times a day and this and the other, and maybe they pray once on a Friday, you know, they will fast during Ramadan. But it's part of the DNA, and that part is lost over in the West.
Can you argue that and maybe the Orthodox Church then in the Eastern Europe, in the former Soviet countries, has got a stronger part because of the role they played in Poland and even in the, you know, in the former Soviet Union, and that's become much more of a part of society.
And Putin uses the Orthodox Church as part of his way to balance his argument about the Ukrainian situation.
So I find it difficult because everything gets distorted by this, by Russia saying, oh, it's the Ukrainians and NATO that have done this and that. And then you end up not really getting to what's been going on. And I like to. Sometimes you have to listen to the academics, not the politicians, not the political people. And I don't necessarily agree that it's politics that have let them down either. I think it's religion that's letting people down. And it's the non-understanding of the various religions that creates a problem. Now, as I understand it, in Dagestan, what you've got is it's a Muslim community, a heavily Muslim community. The Orthodox Church, like it's a bit like the Church of England went into every place in the UK in order to try and wipe out the Roman Catholics, because because of Henry VIII, you know, because he wanted to marry out of wedlock or whatever it was he wanted to do. So they create a church and let's wipe everybody else out. Well, you go back a bit before then, and the Roman Catholic Church then came into the country and wiped out what was the religion of the country in the UK at the time, the Druids and all of those people. And you look at Dagestan and you go, as I understand it, and I keep saying, as I understand it, yep, you've got a heavily Muslim community and you've got Islamist fundamentalists amongst them. So it's actually a religious group within a religious group that don't agree. It's similar to Iran. You've got millions of Muslims, but you've got this heavy core of saying, yes, but to be a proper Muslim, you have to do this, and you have to become an Islamist, effectively.
I have to interrupt on that. I think your viewpoint on Iran is 100% incorrect. And this is half the blood. This is half the problem that I find.
Yeah.
No, let me finish on this one. Okay, Iran is a theocracy. They are still quite liberal in the country.
Yeah.
As a theocracy.
Yeah.
Religion is probably one of the least religious countries in the Middle East. Okay, the leadership is conservative. You see mullahs with, you know, big beards. It gives the sort of impression that it is a very strict religious country. But, you know, for example, let's talk about Ramadan and fasting. They don't really do much. Iran has a tremendous amount of pagan rites. Well, it's not pagan. It's Zoroastrian, which is one of the fundamental bases of all religions. Mazdar and all that. Their new year is in March. They have, there's a misconception about what actually goes on in Iran. You hear a lot of in the West, you hear a lot about this lady who died in the police custody. You hear a lot about how the women aren't allowed to wear the normal clothes or go around, etc. Some of it is true, but basically it's not. It's a conservative country, yes. Is it really oppressive, any more oppressive than many other countries? And especially if you're looking in the Middle East, the answer is probably no. But it does have very bad PR.
Well, the Revolutionary Guard is because they were the new marketing department, put it that way. Well,
exactly. And we have they're having elections now coming up, and there are a couple of reformist candidates, but reformist... You know, if you want to change the country, you have to change from within, not from outside necessarily.
Absolutely.
And there are a couple of candidates that might do quite well. They are still conservative. From Western points of view, they're still quite conservative. But they are slowly reforming. I mean, now you go to Iran, you go to Tehran, for example, and as many women go without head cover as they do with. So there is progress, there is change, but it's quite slow.
Yep.
But it's not, if you look at the... terrorist activities that have been going on due to Islamic fundamentalists. You will find out that the majority of these activities is done by Sunni rather than Shia.
Oh, yeah.
Sunni is Saudi Arabia, Shia is Iran. And most of the majority of events, I mean, one or two things have been done by Shia, but the majority, like 9/11 and everything, Somalia and everything else, is Sunni. So you have to actually, even when you look at Islam itself, you have to know the nuances between the, shall we say, the infighting parties and what they represent.
But you have to know the nuances, and this is the problem that we do, because we do everything with broad brushstrokes, don't we?
If you don't understand the religion, you don't understand the differences between the religions, and the Sunnis and there's more than that, because you've also, on top of that, layered underneath that, if you've got the tribal, if you take Kurdistan, for example, it's in a place called Kurdistan, but yeah, I worked for a guy who was very pro-Kurdistani people. They were in seven different countries. They're only in seven different countries because when they drew up the lines of Africa, you know, between Italy and Germany and France and Britain and Spain, you know, they just put a line on a map and said, right, that's that country, that's that. There was no Kurdistan. So the Kurdistan people, who are tribal, but they are all internally tribal, but they're so big, they spread across. If they'd have made Kurdistan, you know, all the other countries would be half the size that they are, because Kurds are massive. But because they've got no country, they don't exist. It's called... But that's nonsense. But because we don't understand what they're about, so from a Western point of view outside, we see not just the woman who was killed in the prison. We see, and I believe you, you know, we had the guy who was on, who knew so much about Iran, didn't he, a couple of weeks back, the new guy. And
yeah, that would be Richard.
Was it you?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Because you... So you was working in Iran?
No, I've been in and out in Iran.
Oh, right. Okay.
For many, many years.
Which was tremendous, because you could listen to it and go... Oh, right, now I understand a bit. So I don't ever profess to be an expert in any of the stuff I talk about. It's just an opinion. But our opinions are based on what we see and what we hear and what we feel. And what you feel and hear and see from it. I worked with a guy, I think I said it when I rang in. I worked with a guy who came from Persia, you know, with the Shah.
Iran. Yeah, yeah.
And if you wanted to see how that corrupt person, you want to see how the West destroyed Iran, it was when they got rid of the Shah. No, it's not. It's when they put the Shah in.
No, the West destroyed Iran when Kermit Roosevelt, of the presidential name, I think he was... He's definitely part of the family, and the British decided they didn't like democracy, and they got rid of Mossadegh in 1953, who was elected. And this is when, because, you know, Mossadegh wanted to have a fairer share of the oil revenue. And the British, who started Anglo-Persian, which is BP.
It's about how you set your own mind. So I worked with a guy who escaped from Iran. He was, and his problem was, he was working for BT and he wanted to retire. And to escape from Iran, he lied about his age. So he was going to have to work until he was 76 before he could retire in an organisation where you could retire at 60. That's how much they distorted.
Need to go to a break and then back for more Viewpoint. Sorry.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always lively, joined in the studio by Richard Cowell and Alf Brewer. Let's go to the WhatsApps. Just to let you know, Felix, that Stephen Ritson, who's been listening, said, and also Richard said about no planets, utter chaos. Is your guest talking about Harry Southgate's tactics, Ritson? Let Felix know I have nothing from him, neither WhatsApp or email. Felix, if you're listening, he hasn't had that in, so please send it to him again. We are fed up with wokeism. I haven't got a name here, sorry. But a bit more from Richard Cowell rather than Alf. There you go. We've had enough of socialism looking after the so-called minorities. The silent majority are fed up paying for the minorities. They are also fed up with the amount of airtime given to these minorities. Gays, lesbians, trans, etc. While we are about it, why does every advert on TV include all minority groups? Why are 80% of the population subjected to this? It does not represent the makeup of the population. We are fed up with it. We are fed up with wokeism, but the media are fascinated with this. The vast majority can't stand it. That's from PJ. Thank you, PJ.
I thought it was Gary.
No. Unfortunately, the recent attacks in Dagestan are related to the events in Gaza. Dagestan is a bigger Muslim majority. The double standards in dealing with Israel versus Russia does create, unfortunately, backlash against synagogues. We did see this unfortunate episode in France against this Jewish schoolgirl as well. The Palestine issue is at the heart of so many events. That is from Vanessa. Richard said at the beginning of the show he thought Starmer will have difficulties working with the civil servants. Don't forget, Starmer headed up the Crown Prosecution Service, which has 6,000 civil service employees. And I'm just seeing what else has come in. I pronounce iron with an R. Thank you very much. So.
Iron.
No, you can roll your R's. Careful how you say it. Those bongos.
East London.
Right then. Well, once we get through that, going to the National International News in the back for more Viewpoints.
Talk Radio Europe.
Your voice in Spain.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
Always live, always lively today, being no exception. Joined in the studio, as you can probably hear, by Alf Brewer in the background and Richard Cowell. If you want to get involved with today's show, then these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Those are the numbers to get in touch with us if you've got to talk about these or other issues. Now, we got, had to squeeze in a few WhatsApps before we went to the national and international news. But Richard, off you, you wanted to continue with the point.
No, I just on the comment on the WhatsApp, you know, I appreciate that Starmer has been a civil servant for many, many years, but I just have these visions of Hackett in, or Hacker in Yes Minister. That's what fills me with dread, you know. So yes, I do appreciate his history, and he might have been very, very good at what his job, but it's, as I said, I'm a bit concerned about how much he actually can change.
That's why I was trying to explain about, because I'm long in the tooth and I go through all the history and I was in the middle when it happened, just especially for Gary's benefit, so he understands. I don't come on this programme to do a Labour Party speech, manifesto, whatever. It's my life. I chose to leave a well-paid job, fairly significantly well-paid job, to become a Labour Party organiser in 1994 because I wanted a Labour government. For no other reason, I took a huge pay cut. I went to a job that, to be honest, is not highly regarded by most people. I was an organiser in the London Borough of Greenwich for three MPs, an MEP, and whoever else wanted to pile their stuff on top of me, plus the fact I had to raise my own pay and everything else that went with it. So it's a vocation. It's not just something that I've dreamt up or I couldn't get a job anywhere else. As I said, I worked for British Telecom. I was a serious telephone engineer, senior telephone engineer. Done it for 25 years and then just decided, 40 years of age, change of life, went and worked for the Labour Party. So for me, it's a real...
Either, did you? Huh? You didn't get a tattoo on yourself either, did you?
No. I got a certificate.
The Greenwich Campaign Medal.
No, I got a certificate.
A Labour Red Rose.
I've got them as well.
I got them.
I got a certificate from Sir Ian Valance to say that I'd done 25 years service or some nonsense. So I took the certificate out. The picture frame was wonderful, though, for putting family pictures in.
Right.
Yeah, it meant nothing. What meant to me, and what happened then, is it was, we had Michael Foote, we had our worst defeat for years, before Corbyn came along, we had our worst defeat for years, and I, stupidly, as a trade union leader, was part of the downfall of a Labour government, because when Callaghan was the Prime Minister, all of the trade unions were up in arms about all sorts of things. Mainly, it was called the shorter working week. It's when we did away, if you recall, when Thatcher came in, almost immediately she did away with Saturday morning working. All the banks, you know, stopped opening on a Saturday morning. Shops didn't. And then they started opening all day Saturday.
You're going to go to about half-day closing in a minute, aren't you? That was the
No, it's just, well, yeah, half-day closing was for the shops, was the thing, because they opened on a Saturday morning, a Saturday afternoon. But the whole thing was a big... So I learned a lesson in 1979 that said, and it's a harsh lesson, you know, you want to knock a Labour government, you want to knock a government that you agree with 90% of the time. What you don't do is, you know, kick them so hard that you kick them out of power. And we ended up with Thatcher for, you know, God knows how many years after.
We ended up with Thatcher.
Yes.
Fortunately, we ended up with Thatcher.
For trade unionists, we ended up with Thatcher. You didn't work in an industry that was destroyed by her. You didn't work in any of the other state industries that were destroyed hired by her.
I was actually working up in Newcastle upon Tyne.
For a state company?
Not for a state company.
No, so therefore you were never affected. And the state companies, remember, were created, and I say created, because we had millions of people coming back from the war with no jobs to go to. So all of the state-run industries were at least 25% overstaffed, at least. And all of a sudden, Thatcher comes along and says, we can't have this. And also, the biggest single pension fund in Britain was British Rail's pension fund. And if they made the wrong investment, it could damage the British economy. And she said, we've got to break up all the pension funds.
It's life the lines we go. Morning, Cole, you're live on TR. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yeah, morning, everybody. It's Sharon Alicante. Hello. As was the miners' pension fund of
Tilford.
Hello?
British Rail. British Rail, biggest pension fund in Britain.
But the miners' pension fund was raided by Thatcher's setup after what they've been through with everything, reducing everything to nothing. I just want to say to your guest, Richard.
Richard's another panellist, yes. Richard, yeah.
Panellist.
Panellist.
Both sides
agree. Disdain, Sharon.
But he's not even a plank of wood.
It's exact panellist.
Both sides agreed to the Iraq war. The Tories voted for it as well, as has already been said. Regarding Sunak, he's got good ideas, really. Do you know how many, what percentages of immigrants are coming on small boats? 4% of immigrants coming on small boats. But because he wants to make a big political deal out of all this, he's blowing it up out of all proportions. And most of the illegal immigration is people who fly in legally don't go back. So the 4%, if you want to make a big deal and spend billions of our cash on Rwanda, that's not a very good idea. And you're telling me he's a man of ideas? Come on.
Put it this way.
And the other thing, regarding Brexit, they continue to lie about the benefits of Brexit. He said the other day that because we were out of the EU, we were able to have our own tax codes on alcohol and that sort of thing. And I thought, I looked into it, and Germany has lower alcohol taxes than we do. So that was a lie. So he's getting by lying to the people, as did the Brexiters before him. And I just find this continuation of lies very upsetting, and our country's going to the dogs on the basis of right-wing lies. Thank you.
Sharon, as always, lovely to hear from you this morning.
Cheers.
I don't want us to miss Felix's point either, because he often accuses us of ignoring what he says. So he was talking about, it's not about whether, yes, about nuclear weapons.
Yeah, by the way, I had a WhatsApp in from somebody who has sent me a voice message on the WhatsApp. We can't take the voice messages. I was trying to listen to it and transcribe it, but basically saying everybody.
So you weren't just ignoring me?
No. Everybody's nervous, seems to be saying. Everybody's nervous about nuclear war. Sir, I don't know who you are, but you're on the number that starts 669. If you can send me that text out, typed out, it'd be better for me. I can't see the message. But anyway, you're saying, sorry.
Yeah, from what Felix was saying, and I do have a point. Yes, Ukraine have now been given. I'm not sure they've got them or whether they're coming or whether they're promised or whatever. But they are being given long-range weapons. Quite specifically, it's because the Russians have moved some of their bomber aircrafts into, not right into Russia, just inside Russia, and the weapons that Ukraine have got, the missiles that Ukraine have got, can't reach these airfields. So they want these missiles or whatever they are as a threat to the Russians to stop sending their bomber planes to do all this damage in Ukraine and Kyiv and places all over Russia. And they just yesterday they bombed loads of places. So Ukraine have been given these, but it's on the clear understanding that these weapons are not to be used ever as an aggressive process. They're a defensive mechanism. If Russia flies the planes, then Ukraine can use the weapons. Now, if Ukraine go, and this is where Felix is right, unless Ukraine go rogue, and that's the bit that we never have control of, unless Ukraine go rogue, I cannot see that they are going to renege on that understanding, because then they won't be provided with, you know, more weapons and more resources and more whatever it is to carry on defending themselves. Now, I'm not sure, and nobody ever seems to know, because of the, you know, because of all the nonsense that goes on with reporting, five missiles at Crimea. Mm. The last I understood is that Crimea is actually still in Ukraine. It's never been in Russia. He annexed it, but Crimea is part of Ukraine, and presumably they're allowed to fire missiles, rockets, cannons, whatever it is, in order to hit targets in Crimea, to do whatever it is to process their claim to regaining their land. Now, I find it difficult for somebody to then say, oh, no, they're attacking Russia. You know, they're not attacking Russia. They're defending the Ukraine. And until that changes, we will have this never... Well, my... honest opinion, this will end up, it's going to be never-ending conflict.
Well, we had that before, didn't we, in Chechnya, with that, we went off for 20 years.
Well, yeah, and hang on, Ukraine's been going since 2004.
Yeah.
It's not something new, it's not something in the last 2 years, ever since...
Actually, you know, Lord Palmerston was the guy who involved Georgia and Ukraine as anti-Russian mechanisms.
What,
you want to go back
game.
In time.
We like to talk about modern history, Richard,
right? No,
which is something that some of us remember.
It's all intertwined. Well, Alf, I'm sorry, but you're going on about Michael Foot and everything like that.
Yeah, but Lord Palmerston,
the history of the Labour Party.
I met Michael Foot. Well, I never met Lord Palmerston. He was just a figure in a book.
But in geopolitics... history is very important.
Of course it is. And you know, Richard, the single thing that we never ever do is we never learn from history, ever. We see it, we look at it, we take it on board, but we never learn from it. So we go through the same process, the same machinations, we end up with the same end product.
Well, this is
the same with Algeria.
I can't agree more with you,
Morocco.
Alf. And this is why, and if I can reply to, is it Sharon who called in?
Yeah.
And, you know, I respect her point of view, and to a certain degree, I agree. Sunak wouldn't be my first choice, but he seems to have more ideas than Starmer. And what we need is ideas to get us out of this continuous spiral of nothingness. And
I heard that. So every idea, every political idea, and you have to put it into that context, because they will be political decisions that are made that will have to be enacted. That's how we move on. And the reality of every single idea that you put forward, there is a cost. If you've got no money in the coffers, and all you have to do, you don't have to think back millions of years. When Cameron won the election, well, he didn't win the election, actually, because Labour won the election in 2010. They just couldn't form a government because the Lib Dems went with the Tories. And what was the first thing they said? They went into the Treasury and they pulled a drawer open, which would have been... It was never one of the civil servants, all that rubbish that they talk about civil servants. This is a desk that they provided, and Giles loves this, for the SPAD, the special advisors.
Like
they're wonderful people. They don't work for the civil service. They're not managed by the civil service. They're run and managed and organised by the political parties. And the first person that brought it in was Thatcher. And then Blair said, how can we ever trust you? We've had all these, and like you said, could Starmer ever work with the civil service? And it's not a case of whether Starmer can work with the civil service, it's whether the civil service will work with the government. So what you have is these, and we're not talking about a couple, there are hundreds of SPADs, hundreds of them. And there you see them, they're all popping up on these, because they all got the TV shows talking about the election, special advisor to Cameron, special advisor to this, special advisor to that, special. They're all spads. That's all they ever were. They couldn't get into politics. They were never going to be selected as candidates. They didn't want to go into local stuff because it's not as much money there. So they become spads. Hundreds of them. What's her name? The woman who's there, she's now the editor or the political editor for the Observer or something. She was the advisor to Miliband. And you go, yeah, I met her. She's just like us. And she's got an opinion. Yeah. Doesn't make her right. But they pay them loads of money and they put these spads in. And that's how you control. That's how you try to control what goes on with the civil servants. But I can tell you, it's not because they can't work in the civil service. It's the reverse. Are the civil servants prepared to do the work that a government decides we want to? And I don't care what government it is. And if you look at Westminster, they didn't have spads.
And it's live to the lines we go. Morning, Cooley. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, Felix.
Hi, Felix.
Thanks again for letting me on. The question of that Alf made about Dagestan, I think it was him, apologies if it wasn't, that there has always been Muslim opposition to the Kremlin, and it also somebody made the point that it was connected with Gaza. And most unlikely, really.
That was WhatsApp in saying it was linked.
The latter, anyway. The thing is that we're not really getting to grips with this, either Richard or Alf, because go back to February 2014 and ask what happened there. And that really has been the impulse to much of what has happened. There was Yanukovych, the pro-Russian, slightly. He was born in East Ukraine, so he would have been a Russian speaker. He disappeared from the scene, and another prime minister took over. Another president took over. What that is called, I do agree with this term. I think that was a coup. I think it was a right wing coup. It goes back to the carrying of images, some of them very big images of Stepan Bandera, who was joined at the hip with the Nazis from 1939 to 1945. And the Azov battalion then that rose up, that Stephen Ritson said had been amalgamated or mixed, was no more, he said. It was now part of the Russian army. This was the Azov battalion that was part of the Maidan uprising, Maidan movement.
Right.
And they were the people who carried the images of Nazi images on their uniforms. And by the way, I feel terribly sad about the death of Louis, which you feel even more sad because you're his friend. But I do really feel sad because he was from Dublin, and he was guarded. Azov were guarding him at that time, if he had a guard at all. But they were in charge of the guarding of them at that time. That's just
are you talking about Pierre Shapchowski?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Right. Pierre Shapchowski, my friend. Yeah, thank you.
I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Not the first time. Anyway, and I can never get a second name. But anyway, Azov has got a big factor to do with all of this, because it was the nature of the coup, the carrying of the carrying of the torches night at night air, big movement, the carrying of Bandera's image, statues all over the place to these people who were active at that time. I know this history terribly well because I've read a lot about it. I bring it right back to 1918,
right,
when there was a huge pogrom of Jews, 150,000 Jews lost their lives in those pogroms in 1918 to 1920. Anyway, in order to understand and where Alf and Richard are going wrong, badly wrong, is that they're not understanding that behind Ukraine has been this war of the neocons, of the Americans who want to control the world, and who have been visiting Ukraine for a long, long time, stirring it up, and supporting these kind of people. That's where it all comes from. Because the trade union movement of, there was a trade union movement in Ukraine, but it was defeated by this movement of right-wing forces behind right-wing nationalism, ultra-nationalism. And I'm very sorry that your friend Pierre got mixed up in this. I blame Fox to a large extent for not giving him more protection, by the way, you know.
Well, it was an artillery shell, so there's an awful lot you can do about it, to be honest with you.
I know, but it's a memory.
Been in Kabul and everywhere since then, but thank you.
It's a memory we have to deal with, Giles. Me slightly, but you in a big way, you know. But
Richard wants to come back. Richard wants to come back on a few points here, just a second.
No, it's just one point, if I may, Felix, just quickly, briefly interrupt. I appreciate your comments, but I'm fully aware of the US intervention. I mean, the Assistant Secretary of State, Victoria Nuland, I believe it was, whose telephone got tapped. And it just basically showed up the American intervention in Ukraine. I mean, it's just a wretched mess. The American government intervened into Ukraine, and they didn't like the pro-Russian premier who was elected. And
no,
because Americans,
he interrupted phone call, Richard. He interrupted phone call. He overheard phone call. She was picking the government along with the ambassador. Picking the future government of Ukraine.
That's right.
After the overthrow of Yanukovych.
Exactly. And I was saying that, this American intervention doesn't help matters much, because whenever the United States intervenes, hell lets loose. And they don't clear up their mess. That's the biggest problem, as far as I'm concerned. If they only cleared up...
They were the centre of it, Richard. They were the centre of it. Ukraine would not have even contemplated a fight against Russia.
Exactly.
A nuclear armed war.
But what I'm saying, Felix, is that I appreciate what you're saying, and I quite agree with you. It's not that I don't necessarily know this. Of course, I know that Victoria Nuland, the American government, was involved in it. But I get fed up of American bashing, but that seems to be the way it goes.
Felix, thank you for your call in, and good to have you with us.
Thanks very much for having me on, Charles. Thanks
very much. You do know that Stephen Ritson didn't get your message, by the way, okay?
I think he did, but I'm not seeing it.
All right, okay.
What does two ticks mean?
It might have gone through. I'm going to go to an ad break and then back with more Viewpoint.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively, as always. Giles Brown live from the studios of TRE Talk Radio, your voice in Spain. If you want to get a viewpoint across, these are numbers. Oh, I said that full of vim. Here we go.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And it's to the WhatsApps we go. In the digital age, I can get a message anywhere in the world in under a second, the 21st century, and people wonder why young people aren't interested in politics and don't vote. If they listen to your show, unlikely, and hear dinosaurs banging about 2,000 years old conflict, miner strike, Thatcher, Brexit, is it any wonder? Thank you very much. Also, what a short memory Alf has. This one says, the nationalisation of British Rail, what a joke that was. I was a commuter at the time. So there we go. But we're going live to the lines.
He was a commuter. That would have been in the 50s.
Right then, 952-78-4000. Morning, call you live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Giles. My name's Paul from Meath.
Morning, Paul. How are you?
Very well, thank you. And yourself?
Another day, another drachma. Now, what can we do for you today, Paul? What's your viewpoint?
Well, right, listen. I've been listening to a lot of the stuff you're talking about this morning. Firstly, I'd like to say I heard on the World Service in the middle of the night that Julian Assange is, thank goodness, is out of prison. Yeah. And obviously they had to, you know, America wanted him over there in a supermax prison just for the rest of his life, just because he'd embarrass them about the awful things they get up to with their military-industrial complex. And like I said to you before, America is just a war machine. I mean, look at the war they've started in the Ukraine to try and get into Russia. I mean, anyone that thinks that that was this awful Putin, oh, he's invaded that country, he's just protecting himself. And, you know, all this money that they keep giving to this guy Zelensky, who, okay, he was a comedian, he's now a dictator because he's saying we're not going to have any election, and he keeps getting rid of any opposition that he's got rid of. I'm not on anybody's side in this, because I think why we got permanent wars. We have been at permanent wars since I was a kid. Well, before I was a kid. But how it works, which most people haven't got a clue how this works. America produces tons of weapons, and of course they degrade. So at some point they can't just stockpile them. So they want to use them. But America has always stolen countries. They stole Hawaii. Look at all the countries they've been into and the hypocrisy of them. Look at what they did in Vietnam. I mean, your friend Alf there saying, oh, you know, Saddam Hussein's a terrible man. He wasn't a terrible man. As always with all these things, oh, mud stick. So the CIA or Mossad would have gone, oh, he killed all the Kurds. Well, possibly he did. But look what the British have done. Look what the Americans have done. I mean, America went in and almost wiped out Vietnam. They just carpet bombed. I knew people who were there. I knew people in the American military. You know, but what really happens with America and Britain and France with their huge arms manufacturing? It's money laundering. What America's doing now is all those weapons that got dumped in Afghanistan, that was done on purpose so that they could then go to Congress, go, we need loads more money off the taxpayers. They all get backhanders because it's all laundered money. And that's what they're doing in Ukraine. That is laundering money, but at the expense of a population of poor people. You know, all the poor old Ukrainians getting slaughtered. Do you see my point?
I see a lot of dots being joined together. How's that for an answer?
Well, but also when people like Alf go on about democracy, there's no democracy is just a word. We haven't got democracy in England. That election will be rigged, the same as it was in America. I mean, I've got friends in America.
Yeah.
They all just despair. Biden wasn't elected. He was put in by the CIA. That was, you know, he didn't get 81 million votes. It's absurd, but. And it's like Donald Trump said, as soon as he gets into power, there'll be wars. Well, look at it. There's two wars. Now they've started one in Palestine, you know. It's like these wars are all by design.
Right.
Hamas did not. I've been in Israel. I don't know if you've been there. It's like a military camp.
Right.
When I heard what had happened there, I thought there's no way in a million years Hamas just piled into Israel and kidnapped all those people. Those people have been kidnapped by Mossad. That's all been done by Mossad.
Right,
but
okay.
Mud sticks. So everybody's going, oh, the Palestinians need to be wiped off the face of the earth. This is how it works.
Right, okay. Well, thank you for your calls in there. Always good to hear some different viewpoint. Richard.
Yeah. And also the other thing.
I'm just going to let Richard come. Hang on. Yes, go on. I was going to let Richard come back on a point there. Hang on a second, Paul. Yeah.
No, I find some of what you're saying quite interesting. The one thing in particular, what you say about the American war industry, if you look at the Senate and the governors and people like that, and you see where a lot of their wealth comes from, Nikki Haley in particular, who was quite impoverished and then suddenly she became extremely wealthy. A lot of them have vested interests in the war industry.
Well, of course they do. They insider trade. Listen, look at Al Gore, but this is jumping now. Al Gore has become a billionaire on climate change. It's just another tax. Climate change doesn't exist. We've always had climate change. It's, you know, it's like...
I think the 1,000 people that have died during the Hajj in Saudi Arabia might disagree a little bit with you on
well,
that one.
Yeah, but hold on a minute. Hold on. Have you ever been to Saudi Arabia?
Yes, I lived in the Middle East for 25 okay. years, so okay. I've been
well,
there like many
that,
times.
I was in, okay. Well, it gets
I actually ran a business in Saudi Arabia in Dammam. I've been to Riyadh and Mecca and Medina, Khatif. Yeah. I've been all over the place in Saudi Arabia. Yeah, so tell me, please.
Well, I was at the Dead Sea doing a film there years ago, and the heat there was just unreal. You know, it's not like being on Brighton Beach or something. You know, I lived in Africa. It's incredibly hot. You think it gets hot here. You go and try living in Africa, you know. It's like, this is all rubbish. But you see, we've all been conned, and it was like the pandemic. It was the biggest con ever. I can prove, because I was taught years ago, I worked for Walter Cronkite in Africa, and he said to me once, I said, when the coup was on here, Walter, and he said, get your facts straight. And he said, it wasn't a coup, it was an attempted coup. And from that day onwards, I've always lived by trying to get, you know, the truth out of something, get it the facts straight. And the thing is, you know, I find that, I looked up the coup in Africa, in Gambia, and all the newspapers have written the coup. So it just shows you how bad the media is, you know. It's like...
Well, I don't have any disagreement with how bad the media is, but I do have a little bit of a question mark on your viewpoint on the global warming.
Okay, but look at Al Gore. What was he saying years ago when he had that? What was he saying? It wasn't global. Global warming. He had global warming. He became brilliant. But look, all those politicians in. I used to live in Washington, D.C. All those politicians, right? They're all crooks. Look at Nancy Pelosi. Look how rich she is. Look at.
But you have to be. You have to be relatively wealthy before you even step into the political arena, don't you, Paul? When you're talking about the states, it's not. It's not a case that you can start as a sweeper in Minneapolis and then end up as a president.
Or a taxi driver in South London. Yeah, but it's like. Oh, yeah, but then again, look at the English politicians.
Yeah, where did Tony Blair taxi driver from off? South London. I represented social worker from South London. I worked for. Yeah, I worked for a guy who was an advocate for the Kurds, who would every year would come and talk to all the local constituencies about why Saddam Hussein was bad for not just for his country but for the Kurds. Just remember, he poisoned, never just killed, he poisoned over 1 million Kurds, it's estimated.
Are you sure of that?
I remember that.
No. Saddam Hussein was killing off the Kurds, and he was going into other countries to kill off the Kurds. And you can, so he killed a few Kurds. No, he didn't kill a few Kurds.
Okay, 1 million people.
Millions.
Well, hold on a minute.
And then you said, hang on. Paul, you had your go, and you said about democracy. I've never said, you know, the Britain's a great democratic organisation. First-past-the-post systems ain't democratic, but they're more democratic than an autocracy or a dictatorship or any of those other words that's got crissy at the end of it. So I'm not saying that it's pure in the UK, but I'll tell you what, you've got more chance and you've got less chance of it being corrupted by the corruptibles than you have in many other countries. That's what you can say about the UK.
I disagree.
Okay, so tell me, give me one example of where you think British MPs have been corruptible in order to get elected. Just one example.
Okay, hold on a minute. To be elected or to be...
To be elected. You have to get elected in the first place.
Corruption. The money off. Yeah, the husband and wife team that were taking money off.
The Hamiltons.
Then there was...
Hold on, in order for them to get elected, you can't just drop it in and say, right, because I've named a couple, the Hamiltons got there individually, before the money. There's loads of them.
Thank Paul, thank you for the call in. Good to hear from you. I'm going to get another call.
Before I go, just remember, all governments are mafias. Where do you think the mafia got the idea for the
Thank
mafia
you very from? Much for your call in there.
Me My pleasure.
More thugs, I'll agree with that.
Mr. Phillips. Morning, calling live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
This is Gil from Calpe.
Hello, Gil.
Just a comment about the previous call. It was a bit amusing. I agree with him on several things. I mean, for instance, politicians are corrupt and they're all about money. Absolutely. The military industry is pushing in order to make profits. Yeah, I personally agree with that. Even what he said about climate change, I agree with him. I mean, the fact that there's a terrible heat wave now in Saudi Arabia doesn't prove that there's a good climate crisis. Yeah, it just proves that the temperatures are going up. But that's been happening for hundreds of years now. It's not nothing else. But to say that Saddam Hussein was not a bad man, well, that's stretching it a little bit too far, and especially what he's saying about the people who were kidnapped, on the 7th of October, the Mossad planned it. I mean, as if all these people who were kidnapped and some of them returned, yeah, you know, just made up a story, you know, because they felt like it. I mean, that is a little bit sick.
Gil, still there?
Hmm?
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Yes. So yes, I mean, one has to be, I mean, it certainly has an open mind, that person, but conspiracy theories about everything.
I just got a message in saying, let the guy on the phone talk, please. That was the one previously. Otherwise, you look like you're censoring everything. Well, I thought, again, he had quite a large amount of time, I would have thought, there. If you try to get an LBC, you'll be off before you can say James O'Brien. Anyway. Gil, yeah. As always, thanks for your call. Good to hear from you.
Okay, thank you.
95278-4000 is the phone number. To the other line we go. Morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, Giles. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Who's this?
It's Nigel from Matteron.
Hello, Nigel. How are you?
I'm fine. Happy birthday, Alf. I've been listening all morning, and I think, wow, how can anybody defend Putin? He was an evil bugger when he was KGB, wasn't he? He was killing thousands then, so, you know, how can anybody defend him? I really don't know, so. Anyway, that's yep. Right.
That was your viewpoint. Right, thank you very much. Have a lovely day, and thank you.
And take care.
And yeah,
happy left winger.
It doesn't have to be. You can make a viewpoint. It doesn't have to be a huge.
That's right. And let's put it a different way. Yeah. How do you defend Putin? Putin is doing no more than being the leader of Russia, whether you like their elections or not. And by far the greater proportion of the population of Russia want him to be the leader and want him to do it. And as Richard said many times earlier, you don't have to agree with what he's doing. You don't have to believe in what he's doing. But at least he's there. He was put there to do a job. And he's doing the job that he was put there to do. You may not like it. But, you know, such is life. The fact that he's doing stuff that we don't agree with, and we're going to, you know, and we are going to, as if I'm ever going to pick up a gun and go to the Ukraine, no chance, or anywhere else for that matter where there's violence, because I think diplomacy, and it's not politics, it's diplomacy that sorts out the problems of the world, because as soon as you put politicians in, you'll make the situation even worse, which is what happens when the Americans start, because their diplomats fail because they're not as good as the diplomats in lots of countries, and then they send in the politicians, and boy, do you see it get worse overnight. So politicians and politics very rarely sort out the problems. Diplomacy and talking, yeah, and Chamberlain wasn't wrong, was he? Jaw, not war. And I've never, ever not believed that. So just half of the problems of the world, wherever they start, whether it's religious, whether, I tell you what, I'm a West Ham supporter. You should have come to the East End of London when we were doing football matches and seen a few wars going on.
Yeah.
You know, West Ham Millwall, West Ham Chelsea, West Ham.
Just got some breaking news here. Tories said they can no longer support Craig Williams or Laura Saunders as candidates. A party spokesman just said after they were accused of betting on the timing of the general election. Just that's coming through now. Just want to go to the WhatsApps as well whilst we are
That's an individual, by the way, who said that. The Tory party are still maintaining nothing's going to happen to them until after the investigation.
And the actual party,
Conservatives. The Conservatives withdraw support.
It's not an individual.
Right.
It's the party.
This coming... This coming in, yeah, this coming...
They're all the candidates, aren't they?
Yeah, the Tory candidates.
The candidates.
The two that...
They'll still be there in the election.
They can stand as independents, I suppose, yeah. This, in reply to, I totally agree with Richard. Is this from, I think this is from Vanessa? This, I totally agree with Richard. History is important. It puts current events into perspective. Ukraine's situation is a mess. Who knows, without CIA intervention in Ukrainian election, maybe there would be no war. It's easy to blame Putin without understanding history. America will not put up with foreign interference in their election. In reply to Alf, Saddam was not taken out because he killed and used weapons of mass destruction on Kurds or Iranians. He was a useful tool to start the war with Iran and prematurely invade south of oil-rich Iran. Once he failed in his mission, he was no longer useful to the Americans, so in getting rid of him, it was not because they wanted to bring democracy to Iraq. Thank you for those.
Absolutely. Actually, the interesting point on that one, if I may, had the Americans not... the Iran-Iraq war, which lasted for about 8 years, that came just shortly after the coup when Ayatollah Khomeini came over.
Yeah.
Had that not occurred, then maybe history had been rewritten itself and they would not have that theocracy in Iran. Because not everyone agreed with that theocracy, with Ayatollah Khomeini. Mm. But the war came along and everyone said, hey, you know, we're a nation, we have to fight against the invaders, and that actually gelled everyone together.
Yeah.
If you want to get involved with the show, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
And we're into the last, 7 and a bit minutes of today's Viewpoint. Going to the WhatsApps. Morning to you, Dawn. My question is, how far back do we go for governments to claim ownership of a country or region? Each time a war is resurrected and people are killed in both sides, more hatred is created for the people involved. Maybe we can have a cut-off point similar to tax departments, where they can only go back so many years. Not a bad idea, I suppose. And just looking, seeing what else is coming in. I think we are okay with just checking my emails and whatever. I think we are fairly up to date with where we are in terms of correspondence. If you wish to get your points across, then these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Into the last 5 minutes of this morning's show, which means the phones are going to get a bit hectic. So let's talk about home issues. Somebody, no more Ukraine, Gaza, etc. Let's talk about the false narrative of 14 years of bad Tories forgetting the aftermath of the financial crash they had to deal with, the enormous immigration that Blair started, the ridiculous university policy of Blair, COVID, the energy crisis, and the Ukraine war. Let's not forget all about the civil servants and NHS employees, all dead against anything government does that disturbs their living standards. That's a rather. There you go.
Well, I find actually quite interesting when people start saying, "Well, you know, let's talk about home issues." Well, we all live in Spain. You know, Spain is our home. So let's talk about Sanchez and his apparently corrupt wife,
and a great
and the agreement he's doing with the separatists in Catalonia. You know, that's home stuff, isn't it?
Well, exactly, but you know, that's...
We are immigrants. Yeah, we are immigrants ourselves. You've got to be very careful.
No, because we're expats, you see. We're not immigrants, we're expats.
You know? Oh, that's the difference.
Everybody who's a foreigner is an expat. You don't have to be British to be an expat.
Yeah.
It's just anybody who doesn't come from Spain.
I will always remember John Dodge when he phoned in one time and he got his mixed up between elk and ilk. And so he said that people were going into the UK and then bringing over all of their elk rather than ilk, which was... You know. And we get live to the lines we go. That's probably the ghost of John Dodd on morning. Good morning, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Giles, it's Paul again. I just want to make a point.
Yeah.
But to Alf, as I said about getting your facts straight, How many Kurds did Saddam Hussein kill?
Estimate, a million Kurds.
Well, that's where you're completely wrong.
Of course I'm completely wrong.
I agree with you, by the way, on that one.
It's 182,000, so you're a bit out.
182,000 once.
Sorry?
182,000 once. The guy who I worked for, he can look it up if you want. His name was John Austin Walker, MP, and he used to do all this stuff with the Kurds. And Saddam Hussein was the only foreign person who went into other countries to kill the Kurds.
Turkish do. The Turks do.
No, the
Quite
Turks,
regularly.
The
no, Turks. No, 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 they do. Honestly, they
when
do.
When they were attacked, they went into Syria.
No, but also, let's get something straight. The war, which was a terrible war, well, they're all terrible, with Iran-Iraq, yeah. Which was like trench warfare, and they were just yeah. bogged down. That yeah. was a million people.
That was a million people. 8 years and a million people. I agree with you, Paul. Yeah.
Mm. So I'm just saying that. Yeah.
Thank you, Paul. Well, thank you for that one.
Okay, I'll give in. It wasn't a million. It was 880,000. So the guy who I knew, who I trusted, who I worked for, who was, by the way, was a Benite, left-wing Labour MP, and he used to go to Kurdistan, well, he used to go to somewhere in the Middle East yeah. every single year and spend 3 and 4 weeks just talking to the Kurdish people about what the British Parliament could do for them. And the single biggest thing he came back with was how do we get rid of Saddam Hussein and his government? And that's long before, I'm way off beam for, oh, it's the Americans that wanted to do this, that and the other. This was a guy who genuinely left-wing
actually
person.
Used the Kurds.
Pardon?
The Americans actually tried to use the Kurds. The Americans actually of promised course. The Kurds. No, the Americans
use anybody, wouldn't they?
The Americans promised the Kurds a whole lot of money and military support if they went up in arms against Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
And at the last minute, the Americans backed out.
Well, of course.
And this is why, part of the reason why there were so severe reprisals against the Kurdish nation over there.
Of course there would, but I'm talking about a guy who used to put his time out. It was his own time. He was a British MP, a long-standing MP, who dedicated, I'll say dedicated, he spent so much time dealing with the Kurds. But, of course, other people are always going to be... I don't profess ever to be an expert on
it. I would have a look at the figures that you're quoting, because I think a million
whatever they are, my mate John Austin Walker, who changed his name to John Austin after right. divorced, he became John Austin, but for all of his time in Parliament. And he would do all of his questions that he was allowed to ask, all of the subcommittees he was allowed to attend, everything he did, not everything, but he centred a load of his stuff on the Kurds.
Just quickly, and there was me thinking you're going to say he transitioned and changed his name to Jane, but anyway, we're live. Good morning, Cooley. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Just the point I was going to make. There's a very interesting documentary of a doctor, a lady doctor, talking about when she lived in Iraq. And she said, in the days of Saddam Hussein, it was very conservative. And, okay, you didn't upset, you know, well, she was saying you could walk the streets at night, you could do whatever you wanted, and it was... people were prosperous, whatever. I mean, the thing was, he was put in by the CIA anyway. But it was, you know, they said it was a society. Once the Americans went in there because they wanted him out, because he didn't play the game. He's like all these people, like Gaddafi.
Paul, we're going to... I'm not censoring you, but I'm going to get ahead of the bongos, which means we're running out of time. So thanks for your call-in and thanks for your points today. Thanks to everybody who's called in, and my special thanks to my guest, Richard Cowell.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much.
And to the birthday boy himself, Alf. Happy birthday. Well, I won't break into song.
Happy birthday. Family do tonight. That's what's pleasing me.
Marvellous. And being here and seeing my jolly little face as well. Of course. This show will be repeated. Thanks for all your calls. 3 to 7 o'clock.
Rest on Viewpoint.
Stephen Ritson is up next.
Your guests and callers do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews.
For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.